Folks, hello and welcome to Tavern Chat. I'm your host, Eric Tenkar, your bartender in the OSR. And yes, we're delving back into Arduin. In this case, the Arduin Trilogy. So the way the Arduin Trilogy works, it's the three original books, but they were re-edited to better organize them, such as it is. An organization was never a big thing in the, I guess, the 70s. But when you look, even at the Dungeon Master's Guide, you wonder why certain things are put into what order they are. But in any case, Dave, this is from page 10, notes on player character types. I find this to be very interesting. Then the second paragraph is interesting for its own reasons. The classic fantasy game almost always uses a Tolkienian, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, cast of characters to a greater or lesser extent. This is not in and of itself bad, but it does tend to limit the scope of a game if they are all that is available. The people who create other games put much more than that into the game, but it has been my experience that most players are highly reluctant to utilize unconventional characters. And honestly, my recollection of running AD&D in the 80s, early 80s was high school, late 80s was college, is that you didn't run any of the classes that were presented in Dragon Magazine. These weren't alternate classes. These were NPC classes. You were not supposed to use them for the player characters, right? You weren't supposed to, because in theory, it all was balanced, right? Theory and reality is two different things, and balance is probably overrated anyway. So to all of you who always seem to play Elven mages or white Anglo-Saxon paladins, this paragraph is dedicated to you. For you will never see your, I'm going to pronounce half this shit wrong, so be prepared, Freint warrior leap 15 feet over the heads of your more mundane comrades to get at the giant spider. Nor will you ever thrill to the sight of your centaur knight being followed through the passages of a dungeon by his Sancho Panza holding a whisk broom, dustpan, and large sack. I happen to really appreciate that image. And Rogue's Gallery, there was a centaur that had, it was a PC that got resurrected and came back as a centaur. I forget the name of the character. So it's not that it didn't happen, but it was not how it was written. Now, if you look at Tunnels and Trolls had a lot more in the way of available races, limited classes. But your customization was the various races, and no, they were not balanced. Balance was not part of TNT. So, never will you hear the complaints of the Brownie Infantry Squad as they whine about that stupid ogre's Cheshire Cat who keeps looking at them and licking his chops. See, now this all requires a strong DM. And if you're going to go beyond the parameters of the game as written, you need to have strong chops and be able to rein things in when they inevitably get out of hand. And never is such a lonely word. Don't be lonely. Take a troll to lunch. I wonder if that's where that quote came from. I've seen that quote many times. The world is a smaller place, but is smaller still in relationship to the myriad worlds of the entire alternity. Now, wasn't that a game system from TSR before they went belly up? Alternity, alternate eternities. Do not be a small player from a small world. Embrace the whole almanity and give the different types a chance. I think you will find the world your game is in will become a lot more fun if you do. Now, honestly, D&D did kind of expand its chops a bit. Planescape added races, 5e's added races, right? But this concept here, I like it, and yet I don't, because I am of the type that it's like, well, it wasn't a class that was written for it. Oh my God, how do we balance that? I mean, like, the exceptions I would make was like a bard from issue 56 of Dragon. Actually, I think I used a jester class with a jester thief hybrid with my sister, because she thought it was interesting, and she was, I don't know, probably 11, 12 at the time. I wasn't going to say no. And that's part of this, right? It's saying, don't let your initial reaction be no. But it still has to make sense within the world as you, the DM, envision it. Just because one of your players coming to the game goes, oh, I want to play a halfling with wings, doesn't mean that they get to play a halfling with wings. If your world has halfling with wings, well, then maybe things change, right? So when you're designing your campaign, you can throw a little bit of this stuff in there. I remember that's what we kind of did when Arth Arcana came out. Like, how do you add these new classes? How do you add in these new sub-races? Well, you kind of like they were always there, but not rarely seen. You could probably do some of that here too. Now, what this makes me really think, what I would like to do is run a campaign, short one. He's just gonna kick the tires a bit, using Dave's classes, but with classic OSR type rules for combat and spells, because for me, I need that familiarity. If you read the stuff that Dave jumps on about his game system, how to play the game goes right into basically overland travel and possible encounters. And that wasn't how we played, right? We played dungeons. Overland encounters, we didn't worry about that until probably a year or two later. You just happened to show up at a dungeon and you dug in and it was what it was. So now, on to the second paragraph. Individualization of new player characters. The following charts are used to bring individuality and reality to all new player characters. To utilize them, simply roll a D100 on the character legacy chart, cross-indexing the number rolled along the column appropriate to your racial type. This would be your social status. Social status in AD&D, we really got cemented with Unearthed Arcana, coincidentally, right? Then roll a D12 on the character wealth table to determine how much money you have. Finally, roll a D20 on the owned equipment chart to see how you were outfitted for your venture into life. Remember, you may purchase more gear using the money you have and from the charts found in this book. These new charts and tables will expand the individualization of each new character into all the areas previously ignored or ad-libbed. With these final touches, your character will be truly unique. This is important. We've seen this come up in later OSR games. We've seen some of this come up in things like DCC, RPG, right? We've seen some of this come up, again, like in Unearthed Arcana. Your secondary occupations or professions chart in the beginning of the Dungeon Master's Guide. Everybody wanted to be an armorer or a weaponsmith so they could keep their armor or weapons looking really spiffy on the road, right? Or a jeweler so you could appraise magic items. Nobody wanted to be, not magic items, like gems and jewelry. But nobody wanted to, like, oh, my background was farmer. Ooh. But it didn't give you any description as to what that stuff did and what kind of impact it had in game. So I might actually look at that over the next couple of days when I'm up in the Poconos for a few. But interesting, this stuff. And Dave, again, making me think that perhaps I am too restrictive in what I allow in my games. But it is fantasy, right? It does say you can all do it. Theoretically, right? It's all part of the game. I guess it's kind of like a yes, but, right? Like, can I play an Ogre Magi? Yes, but. And then that but balances things out. Dave's got me thinking again. Folks, as always, we are still in the midst of the world of the pandemic. Not telling you what to do. All I'm saying is use your common sense. Okay? Be safe, be well, God bless, roll those dice, roll them well. And I should be back again tomorrow, most likely from the Poconos. Oh, and then this Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central, we have a live stream. I'm not 100% sure who we have as a guest, if any, but Mike and I always do a good time. Looking forward to seeing you there. All right, folks. On that note, I'm out of there. We're out of here.